So I'm just going to give a trivial resolution of the singularity I was talking about. Basically, just top of the space time, so that you don't hit the singularity at all. And that's a neat way to do this. So, but before that, I want to give some brief introduction. So we know that gravity in adiaspheric process is dual to n equals 4 superangular theory. So the question is, can we find a field theory example where field theory example that's dual to Lipschitz spacetime? We want to fill in this box, and to fill in this box, we want to look at all the we want to look at examples of Lipschitz field theories. And if we look at some of the examples for z equals 2, we have a theory studied by Kashru, Mike, and Chetanak. This is z equals 2 non-Abelian Chern Simons theory. Unfortunately, they haven't posted the paper yet. So, but Abelian version is on archive already. And there's another paper by Kurzawa. So here, this is this is first order and time derivative. I'll come to that problem last time. And this is like second order, this is like a usual theory with an e squared term. And this doesn't have an e squared term. So that's brief. That's a small difference between these two theories. And for a generic value of z, like pi is square root 3, we have no examples of any kind of field theory which is local. So I'm not going to address that issue at all. I'm just going to address z equals 2 case here. And the claim is that we can put this thing into the box, even though the box is small. So, a brief overview. So, basically, the reason why we can evade the singularity is because we have a confining solution, which is asymptotically Lipschitz z equals 2. And an interesting thing is that the KK, so this is somewhat similar to the ADS soliton solution. It's just better because the KK modes decouple from the low energy dynamics. So this is somewhat unusual for holographers, and we'll see why such an unusual thing happens. So we'll basically provide some arguments to support claim one. This is based on the holographic dictionary, which is kind of developed. Using this, we can actually show that we can realize z equals 2 Lipschitz Chern Simons theory as deformations of n equals 4 superangular theory with or without adjoint matter. And the punchline is basically z equals 2 Lipschitz Chern Simons theory can confine. I'll spend some time on that. So basically, the solution looks like this. So you can see that the geometry ends at some value of R star, and it's the most important thing is it solves that to be equations of motion. That's an important check that needs to be done. So here, the matter content is essentially it has a non-trivial pi form flux and a non-trivial axion. R axion and the Dirac-on is constant. Those are just some values there. You can see that the geometry approaches Lipschitz spacetime. It has z equals 2 Lipschitz symmetries as r goes to 0. The quick way to see that is near r goes to 0, the metric pretty much looks like this. So p scales like r squared, x3 doesn't scale because it's a comp. So we compactify x3, so it's a compact direction, doesn't scale. So p goes like r squared, x goes like r goes like r, so it has z equals 2 symmetry. And the geometry ends at some value of r. And it's regular. There's no singularity here. You don't even have conical singularity. So r star is not determined by the radius of the compact direction. R star does not depend on L3. So the question is, what determines R naught? R naught is...
The derivative of F probably does depend on the cos star.
derivative of f goes like r star times
so
r minus r naught.
So
the x3 circle actually becomes, so the proper radius of the x3 circle becomes 0 as you go to d pi r. But the reason why x3 is still non-trivial is because of that's non-trivial fiber. So x3 is still non-trivial in the infrared because the fiber does not degenerate, but the proper size is 0. So in some sense, the...
Because of the
crust term, exactly. It's non-diagonal. So in fact, at r equals r star, it's a very smooth limit, and the metric just looks like light cone. It's 2D. It's just the numerator. So the thing is, the claim...
But it does end. You can't
the geometry ends. Because x is a compact direction. If you let r to go beyond r, x cannot be stable. So the thing which determines r naught is some non-trivial boundary conditions on G33, on the metric, components of the metric. And this cannot be usually, you cannot see these non-trivial boundary conditions if you just include the Gibbons-Hawking boundary term. You have to do something non-trivial, which I'm not going to talk about today, but we'll see why such things should be present. And this is kind of similar to what happens in Gupta's picture of Dalton driven confinement, which is discussed in this paper, where I'll come to it later. So the punchline here is that you can see that the confinement scale and the KK scale are arbitrarily different. So you can basically decouple the KK modes. So now we'll see how to identify the dual field theory. So basically here we can see that there's nothing that determines R star. The R star is not dependent on L3, so you can basically make R star and L3.
There's a flat direction in your solution.
In some sense, that's a flat direction, and the reason is because if the null deformation essentially satisfies some linear equation, and there's some choice of parameters there. But
so I guess correction is not such a
problem. So the reason why we have this parameter R naught is something that's determined by boundary condition. We'll come to that later. So it's not some arbitrary thing.
But this solution has an axiom.
This solution has an axiom that winds this x3 circle.
So
it's
not related to any conservative choice of anything in this diagram has.
It is related to boundary condition. A careful treatment of the boundary condition will tell us what R naught is. Basically, you have to do a holographic renormalization that the action is not well defined for all crazy boundary condition. One has to choose a specific boundary condition that relates some term in the boundary counter term to R naught. So there's some large number. We'll come to what that large number is. So that's like the last slide or something. So before that, we just want to do things that we understand properly, which is try to identify the dual field theory. So the first thing that we have to see is like where does the field theory live? So the field theory lives on the conformal boundary, which is this flat space written in some fancy coordinate system. So we can see that the boundary field theory should be a deformation of DOCK of n equals 4 theory. It's a DOCK of n equals 4 theory is because we are studying some field theory on Minkowski space written in light cone coordinates with one of the light cone directions compact. So and another thing which we can see is that the R axion introduces transcendence term once you reduce along x3. It's just you can see that the R axion is related to the theta term in n equals 4 theory, and we can just do some integration by parts and see if we can get this term, which after reduction just introduces transcendence interaction, and that is general level is given by Q. So, and we saw that the asymptotic symmetry, the asymptotic matrix for Z equals 2 symmetry, that Z equals 2 scale invariant. So we have Z equals 2 scale invariant, Lifshitz theory, we have transcendence term, so we want to call it the Lifshitz transcendence theory. But we'll try to make some solid statements. So basically, let's take the limit when R0 goes to infinity and X3 is non-compact. In this case, it's just a nice supersymmetric solution. And there's also SOSX invariance, which is an additional advantage here. And so one of the things that we must remember is, like, when we study the deformation, like when you try to identify the operators that are due to the deformations in the bulk, we have to retain operators that are irrelevant, because operators that are irrelevant with respect to Z equals 1 counting can be marginal with respect to Z equals 2 counting, so we cannot just ignore them. So this is an example that this term actually becomes marginal in the Z equals 2 theory. It's like the quartic term in the Z equals 2 theory. So another thing is, like, we can ignore operators greater than dimension 8 because they are irrelevant with respect to both Z equals 1 and Z equals 2
compact. So, you also have one dimension lower, right?
We have one dimension lower. That's an important thing.
You mean
Z equals 2 into 2 plus 1. So we do the counting with respect to Z equals 1 and 3 plus 1 dimension.
Is it Z plus 1 plus D? Some definition for D.
Oh, right, with some definition.
Well, okay.
So basically, so this is MX is a mystery scale which we haven't defined yet. We'll talk about it in the last slide probably. So the hierarchy of energy is basically we have some DLCQ of n equals 4 theory at high energies, and that's an axionic deformation which sets some parameter gamma, which we defined in previous slide. And we compact, so, and there's unbroken supersymmetry above this compactification scheme. And once you compactify the circle with antiperiodic boundary condition on the fermions, we break supersymmetry, we lose control, but that's a way to still see that the deep infrared theory is actually there is a Lifshitz transcendence theory in this scheme. And
eventually shrinks through three.
So if you want to define close to the scale MX, you have Z equals to your classical Z equals 2 invariant, and then the theory actually confirms the deep infrared.
So Z equals to invariant is a metric, but then you have this other modulus that is variant.
Yeah,
but
it's
like a running coupling.
It's a running coupling.
It's not really
Lifshitz
scale
theory. It's not conformal. It has classical Z equals 2 scale invariant.
Except it doesn't, because some coupling is this is also a property of
the gauge.
I understand that what you're saying is the upshot doesn't actually. Okay. So
gamma and L, what's the difference between gamma and L?
Okay, so gamma is this parameter in the solution that is zero if you just turn off the axionic deformation. It's non-zero axion.
And is there anything which protects Z as you flow down?
So the as you flow down, you just hit a confining theory. So this is just a UV. The UV has Z equals 2 scale invariance. This is the full solution. F of R hits 0 at R equals R star, so it's a confining theory.
So if you down there, you're saying you put the even before you compactify it.
Right,
the
yeah. So, and this is fine if Q is large Q. So that's greater than 1. So, and there's nothing below the confinement scale, so that's a gap. So to identify the dual filtry operator, it's convenient to work with the turbines. And it's just for convenience, there's nothing special. We are interested in the operators that are due to the fluctuations in EYT and EY3. EYT actually satisfies a massive gauge field equation, and the operator dimension is essentially 6. The operator that's dual to EYT, and the operator that's dual to EY3 is a marginal operator, it's dimension 4, with respect to z equals 1 counting. So to identify the precise form of the operator in the dual field theory, we rely on these tables. That's why I put that separately. And that's also another operator which we have to worry about, which is the dilatation mode of the SPI, which is dual to a dimension 8 operator, which has been studied in some of the set of papers. So basically, we can use supersymmetry and SO6 invariance to nail down all these operators. SO6 invariance plays a really crucial role. We don't want to deal with like 27 operators, 54 operators, and things like that. There are just practically finite number of operators here. So one, basically, for each. The dot dots actually represent some operators that are irrelevant, with some terms that are irrelevant with respect to both z equals 1 and z equals 2 scaling. In the next slide, we'll put another set of dots for terms involving fermions and stellars. So the action with this axionic deformation is essentially n equals 4 theory with a theta term which varies linearly along the circle, plus these dimension 6 and 8 operators. And the dimension 4 operators changes the coupling to the kinetic part, like the time. One thing which we want to do is to rename the variables so that it looks more like what these people wrote down, Mike and others. So let us just do it right away. This is just some renaming variables. So we can see that the operators kind of look similar to what those people wrote down. There are two set of dots. One to represent the irrelevant operators. So you can see that the theory looks like something plus these terms, and we see that we have a Chern-Simons interaction. So
these set of dots are the same as.
No, I'll come to that. So the first thing is we'll see that it resembles a gauge theory written in first order formalism. There's no EA squared term here. Since he asked for the full action, so I'm just going to display it. I'm not sure how helpful it's going to be, but I'm just displaying it. So one thing which you can see, it's written in first order formalism. And that's a Chern-Simons. We'll see if we'll get a Chern-Simons. So finally, we'll compactify the circle and we'll make the fermions massive. In addition to imposing anti-periodic boundary conditions on the fermions, we'll also throw an explicit mass term for the scalar, which is basically a trace x squared operator. So usually in the usual ADS soliton picture, like mass for the scalars is generated through loop correction. Here we throw in an explicit mass term for the scalars, which sets a scale mx. This is the mystery scale.
And that's bigger than the dynamical
generation
contribution?
Yes. So here, like at this point, it's just a freedom. We can just add any deformations to the field theory we want. So the reason why we do this is to understand. So there are some non-trivial boundary conditions on this supergravity field. We want to understand what operator in the dual field theory sets this scale. We'll see what this thing does to the supergravity. Before that, we'll just talk about trivial things. So we can see that the KK reduction produces a transcendental star. Fermion zero modes are lifted. Scalar mode zero modes are also lifted because of this explicit mass term we added. And so and we can see that the scalar mass term is actually dual to an exciter string state. So this is like some constant of the Fibonacci multiplet. And this is dual to an exciter string state. And an exciter string state is, cannot be visible, directly visible in supergravity, but it can couple to other supergravity modes. So, and it can generate non-trivial boundary conditions. One way to see that is that decoupling the exciter string state is analogous to integrating out all fields with mass greater than mx. So that's like doing radial integration. And in the gravity theory, it's like doing radial integration. So, and we, like, it's a Polchinski, Hong problem, and Mukundrangaman showed how these can generate, integrating, doing radial integration can produce non-trivial boundary terms. So we can see why non-trivial boundary conditions are generated on the supergravity fields, like when you have an exciter, when you have an exciter state that's being sourced. It's a dangerous, irrelevant operator. The reason why it's there are many ways to see this. One way to see this is its dimension is not protected, operator dimension is not protected. So if you do this at weak coupling, you can see that even though you add the, like, not extreme, so at weak coupling, its dimension is 2, it's actually. So imagine a case where you start with strong coupling, run down to weak coupling, then you can see why it's actually becoming dangerous. But that's not what is happening here. Here, what's happening is that essentially, actually, I should not say that it's not clear what's happening. But from the supergravity side, it appears that adding this term essentially generates non-trivial boundary condition. That's one way to see from holography. So the whole prescription is kind of fuzzy. It's not clear, but there are reasons to believe this is what's happening. At least it's appealing. So, and finally, we are left out with the zero modes of the gauge field, and they organize themselves into theory. So this is the zero modes of the gauge field, written in first order formalism. There's no E squared term here. But there's some crazy E3 squared term which doesn't even appear in the action. It decouples. So, and if you drop the field days also, and also drop. So basically, you get irrelevant terms by integrating out all the series fields. That will also generate this DAEJ squared term, which wasn't there in the original 3 plus 1 dimensional Lagrange. So, if you drop them, you will get the Lagrangian escape, which is, this will appear in archive soon.
So what is the matter
content
that's left at this point?
So it's just a zero modes of the gauge field. So, and those things just form. The theory describing the zero modes is lifted from the gauge field. So. Thank you.
Similarities.
So one thing is, like, which you can see, like, we don't understand string theory in the background, so it's not clear whether these the results that they have shown actually applies to string theory in the background. So the one way to motivate ourselves to study the dual field theory is to check if we can find a way of resolving the symmetric in the dual field theory. But
that would be this max goes to zero.
That's the action. Yeah, the Hessian goes periodic boundary conditions on the circle and set that max to zero. That's just.
And
then yes, it doesn't change from the. Actually, we don't have a solution.
So, do you actually have a formula connecting
R0 and MX? Okay, actually, that is some heuristic way of showing this. It's very, it's somewhat fuzzy, but.
Is it one with RX on the left hand side and MX on the right hand side?
Yeah, it does. So, basically, what you do is just take some really heavy field in the vortex. Use a proxy, use a scalar field as a proxy for the negative exchange state. Make it really heavy. And then you can just do a radial integration. And since the proxy is really heavy, its profile is also really rapidly near the boundary. So if you do a radial integration, it's a fixed seen near the boundary. So, and you can actually work out the detail with some crazy potential
problem. The answer depends on how you
couple it. Yeah, answer depends on the quicker form of talking between this proxy and in that sense it's not precise.
Yeah, I think constraint as well.